From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
Today, we begin with an update from the UN in New York with the spokesperson for the UN Secretary General, Farhan Haq.
Okay, good afternoon, everyone. This morning, the Secretary General addressed a session of the Security Council on conflict prevention and mediation. He urged all member states to strive for greater unity to ensure that prevention and mediation efforts are as effective as possible. When we act early and are united, we can successfully prevent crises from escalating, saving lives, and reducing suffering, he told members of the Council. The Secretary General pointed out how efforts are leading to encouraging developments in countries such as Madagascar, Ethiopia, Eritrea, and South Sudan. But he also emphasized the enormous obstacles to peace that remain around the world and how ultimately civilians pay the price. We cannot afford to reduce the energy and resources we invest in prevention and mediation, he concluded. This afternoon, the Security Council is expected to meet on Mali. The Special Representative of the Secretary General and head of the UN Peacekeeping Mission in Mali, Mohamed Salah Anadif, will brief the Council. And yesterday, the Secretary General spoke by phone to the President of Mali, Ibrahim Boubacar Keita, and offered his deepest condolences to the people and government of Mali following the tragic attack that took place in the village of Subanuku. The Secretary General reiterated the UN's engagement to support the authorities in their search for solutions to intercommunal tensions in the country. We are deeply concerned over the missile attack on the Aba civilian airport in southern Saudi Arabia. We urge all parties to prevent any such further incidents, which risk escalating the current situation, pose a serious threat to the national and regional security, and undermine the UN-led political process. We echo the recent Security Council statement calling on all parties to ensure the protection of civilians and critical civilian infrastructure in accordance with international humanitarian law. We urge both parties to exert more efforts to re-engage in the political process to end the conflict through an inclusive intra-Yemeni dialogue. Close to 70,000 people across Yemen, including internally displaced people, have been affected by torrential rain and flash flooding in recent weeks, culminating in widespread flooding in the second week of June. Hajja is the most affected governorate, where over 8,000 families, or almost 48,000 people, have reportedly been affected. There are concerns that flash flooding could escalate the spread of cholera across the country. Yemen is already experiencing a rise in cholera cases, with 364,000 suspected cases reported since the beginning of this year. The UN and humanitarian partners are conducting assessments and scaling up humanitarian response, despite access constraints in many of the affected areas. Preliminary information indicates that critical immediate needs are shelter, food, non-food items, and cash assistance. We have been asked a few times about UN participation in the workshop being held in Bahrain on the 25th and 26th of June. As it stands, I understand that UNSCO Deputy Special Coordinator, Humanitarian Coordinator, and Resident Coordinator Jamie McGoldrick will be representing the United Nations at the event. Today marks the fifth anniversary of the murder by Daesh of at least 1,500 unarmed Iraq Air Force cadets outside Tikrit Air Academy, formerly known as Camp Spiker. In a statement, the head of the UN investigative team to promote accountability for crimes committed by Daesh, Karim Asad Ahmad Khan, remembered the lives of those killed in that massacre, as well as many members of the Christian, Yazidi, Sunni, Shia, Turkmen, Kakai, and all other communities targeted by Daesh. Mr. Khan said that the UN is deploying its technical, legal, and investigative resources pursuant to Security Council Resolution 2379 of 2017, so that accountability is delivered for Daesh crimes which may amount to war crimes, crimes against humanity, or genocide. Wrapping up a week-long visit to Mozambique, Zimbabwe, and Malawi, the Deputy Emergency Relief Coordinator, Ursula Muller, today called on the world to address the challenges and risks posed by extreme weather events and climate change in the wake of Tropical Cyclone Idai. Ms. Muller said that while the impact of Cyclone Idai was different in the three countries, The disaster gives us a clear picture of how the effects of climate change are increasing the humanitarian needs of people who are already extremely vulnerable. She stressed that the climate crisis is hurting most those who have done the least to create it. More than one in five people living in conflict zones suffer from mental health disorders, according to a study released today by the World Health Organization and published by The Lancet. The new estimates indicate that more people than previously thought experience mental disorders, ranging from mild depression and post-traumatic stress disorder to severe mental illnesses. As a result, WHO is calling for additional investment to increase the availability of mental health services in conflict-affected areas. The study is available on WHO's website. And today is the World Day Against Child Labor. This year's theme is Children Shouldn't Work in Fields, but on Dreams. Today, 152 million children are involved in child labor. Although child labor occurs in almost every sector, 7 out of every 10 of those children works in agriculture. To mark the day, the International Labor Organization has released a report with a series of recommendations to end child labor by 2025, and you can find the report on ILO's website. And after I'm done, you'll hear from Monica Villela-Grayley. And then today at 12:45, there will be a press briefing by Naveed Hanif, Director of the Financing for Sustainable Development Office in the Department of Economic and Social Affairs. And he will brief you on the launch of the World Investment Report 2019. That's it for me. Are there any questions? Yes, please.
Farhan, it's been reported that members of the international community might be meeting tomorrow in Sweden with representatives of Turkey, China, Lima Group, and other international partners, including Cuba, to talk about the future of Venezuela and the possibility of elections in the near future, and the Norway government might be present to be able to talk about those possibilities, as has been said, that the elections will be before the end of the year as the conversations advance. Is the United Nations in any way part of this talks? Will have somebody there to follow the progress? Today, the Secretary General mentioned that you have been following the Norway talks, and then he offered again the offices of good services.
I'm aware of the Secretary General's remarks, so I'd refer you to what he said in the Security Council about that. I'm not aware of any UN representation in the talks tomorrow, but I'll let you know if that changes. Yes.
Farhan, concerning former Secretary General Ban Ki-moon, he addressed the Council this morning, and I'm wondering what bilaterals he may have this afternoon here at headquarters, probably in his capacity in the Elders Group, because I know he's been very busy in New York City, and I'm wondering if he's touching base with anybody else here.
Ironically, after many years of knowing exactly what his daily schedule would be, I don't have any particular way of knowing about his program while he's in New York this time around. So you could contact the Elders. I believe they have a spokesperson who's with the group. And with that, wish you a good afternoon. Oh, yeah, one more.
The United Nations Refugee Agency gave numbers last week about the 4 million Venezuelans. The foreign minister of Venezuela, Mr. Arreaza, has been very outspoken about it and has said that these numbers are a lie and that they are a media campaign give fake information about or to discredit the government of Nicolas Maduro. Is the United Nations and the Secretary General has any response to this type of accusations?
The UN Refugee Agency stands by the numbers. We're not trying in any way to create any particular climate regarding the issues of Venezuela. What we're trying to do is tend to all of the needs of the people who are fleeing one way or another across borders. Thank you very much.
Next is an update from Monica Grayley, the spokesperson for the President of the General Assembly.
Good afternoon, everyone. In a few moments, the President of the General Assembly will deliver opening remarks at the high-level luncheon on disability inclusive development. Ms. Maria Fernanda Espinosa will take part in the event, which is also being attended by the Vice President of Argentina, Ms. Gabriela Michetti, and the President-elect of the General Assembly and Ambassador of Nigeria, Mr. Tijani Muhammad Bandi. The luncheon takes place on the sidelines of the annual session on the Conference of States Parties to the Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities, CRPD. The rights of people with disabilities is one of the seven priorities of President Espinosa's agenda for the current session, as you know already. Last year, she launched the Steering Committee on Accessibility, which is co-chaired by Antigua and Barbuda and the Republic of Korea. The committee seeks the cooperation of member states, the secretariat, and civil society in order to advance full inclusion for people living with disabilities. Ms. Espinosa says that the inclusion is crucial to achieving the Sustainable Development Goals and to harnessing the full potential of approximately 1 billion people who represent 15% of the world's population. 8 in 10 people with disabilities live in developing countries. And this afternoon at 3 p.m., she will attend the high-level meeting on women with disabilities in political and public leadership towards Beijing Plus 25. This meeting will take place at UN Women, just around the corner. So more information on our website. And earlier today, the General Assembly held informal consultations on the political declaration of the High-Level Political Forum on Sustainable Development, which is convened under the auspices of the GA. The meeting will take place on 24th and 25th September this year here in New York. The PGA sent a letter to member states with a revised draft of the political declaration for consideration. Ms. Espinosa appointed two co-facilitators to the intergovernmental consultations, the ambassador of the Bahamas, Her Excellency Ms. Sheila Gwinnett Carey, and the permanent representative of Sweden, His Excellency Mr. Olaf Skog. Member states now are invited to make comments and suggestions on the declaration, which includes commitments and also a call to accelerated action, among other points. And you can find the entire draft on our website in the section Letters. This is actually everything from us. Do you have any questions for today? Rhonda, go ahead. How are you? Fine, thank you.
There, 2 days ago, on the 10th, there was a presentation in an informal meeting of the General Assembly of the Secretary General's Assembly, the independent high-level panel on digital cooperation. Mm-hmm. And it was had a lot of people there, even though it was in the Trusteeship Council. And essentially, the members had not yet read the report, but they were welcoming of it. And there was, I was surprised because there was the Assistant Secretary General, just let me get his name, Fabrizio Hochschild mm-hmm. was there. He's the Assistant Secretary General for Strategic Coordination. And at the very end, he rolled out a very elaborate passing of the report. And I was surprised because the members hadn't read it yet. And I'm sort of wondering, is this under the General Assembly that this is happening? Do you know anything about this and how I can learn more about what the General Assembly, you know, what its plan is? Because this was all new. I thought a lot of people didn't even know that meeting was happening. And
a lot
of people not represented at it as well.
No, actually, the meeting happened, you are right, so it took place on Monday. And we also brought some information the week before about this meeting here. As you know, this is an initiative by the Secretary General, and he appointed Mr. Jack Ma and Ms. Melinda Gates to lead the work. So we had a briefing here as well with some of the participants, and the president had actually a week before an informal meeting of member states where they could meet and discuss the issue. It's an important issue. Of course, we have nowadays about 50% of the population, the world population, which is not connected to the internet. And all that this represents in terms of knowledge and opportunities, you know, the opportunities also in the economy, as we all know. So if you go on our website, you can get more information on this. But also, I can send you the link if you
I would appreciate that, because essentially, I thought that this is a question taken up a long period of time by the internet community, by netizens, by people online, and they were not part of any of this. And yes. I'm just wondering, if everybody is to be connected, the question is, will it be just to get the information and to buy things, or will it be so their voice can be heard and this can be a people-centered information society, which is what the World Summit on Information Society by the UN in 2005 request, you know, soar as the vision. Mm-hmm. And I didn't hear any of that from these people, and I did read a lot of the reports. So I would appreciate if you could tell me more about the president's meeting and, and you know, give me some more background on this. Thank you.
Thank you for the question. Yes, welcome. How are you?
Good, thank you. I have a, is there any updates about the Venezuelan migrants from the PGA?
Yes, in fact, we spoke about that yesterday here when Oscar asked the same question. The situation is very concerning. And from these 4 million people who are now considered migrants or refugees, it doesn't matter. There are people who are actually who had left the country because of the crisis, the political crisis, and all the consequences that they are experiencing right now. So we have these figures from, as you know, our agencies. And from the reports, basically 1 million people, 1 million people out of this 4 million were generated between November and the first months of this current year. So it's a very concerning situation. The PGA is actually following it very closely. As a matter of fact, this morning when she had her meeting with the SG over a breakfast routine meeting, they talked about it. It's a matter that she's you know, have been appealing about in order to both parties and all parties concerned to seek a dialogue, seek a constructive understanding about looking and generating a solution to the crisis. The situation is serious, and the PGA appeals for dialogue and understanding. Because, as we know, no other form of that is not a diplomatic way of solving this crisis might work in this situation. And right now, we are talking about this for a while, but right now, we know that the people of Venezuela need a solution to the crisis, need that this political deadlock is resolved, because the crisis is actually affecting them on a daily basis. And also, just to again reiterate that the PGA is very grateful to humanitarian workers and to the entire UN system, which is helping there as well, but also to the countries which are trying to help and to accommodate the Venezuelans who are leaving their own country because of the political crisis. And the same goes to the groups which are trying to help, and the countries with influence which are trying to help to solve it. Yeah? Thank you.
President Trump held a press conference in the Rose Garden on Wednesday. At his side was the president of Poland, Andrzej Duda.
Thank you very much. We'll take a few questions. Emerald, OAN.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you.
Earlier in the Oval Office, before you did your meeting with President Duda, you were quite critical of Germany as you talked about possibly moving troops from Germany to Poland. Do you think that doing a move like that will put pressure on Germany to meet their defense spending requirements?
No, I don't think so. I just will tell you very strongly that I think Germany is making a tremendous mistake by relying so heavily on the pipeline. And I think it's a tremendous mistake for Germany. But again, Germany's running their affairs, and they'll do just fine. But I was critical. I had been critical of it. It's a tremendous amount of their energy will be supplied by that pipeline. At the same time, having nothing to do with Germany, Poland said that we would like to build a facility, a great facility, and would like to have you come to that facility. So we're going to be there with a limited force, but we'll be there, and we appreciate Poland doing what they're doing. It's a great location. It's a tremendous plant, tremendous facility, and we it's our honor to be there. Poland's been a tremendous friend of ours for a long time, and when Melania and I were there not so long ago, it was a very special day. I think it was a special day for Poland also, but it was a very special day for our country. So I appreciate that, and our relationship is just a very strong one.
And if I may, would you indulge me with one more question before I get to ask President Duda our question? In more recent news, yesterday you revealed you got another letter from Kim Jong-un, and today we hear of a potential thawing of relations between South Korea and North Korea as Kim Jong-un sent his sister to South Korea. Now, could you give us an update on more of what was in that letter? And is there a third summit in the works?
He just wrote me a very nice letter, unexpected. And someday you'll see what was in that letter. Someday you'll be reading about it, maybe in 100 years from now, maybe in 2 weeks. Who knows? But it was a very nice letter. It was a very warm, very nice letter. I appreciated it. Okay.
Thank you.
Good. Thank you very much.
And then, if I may, for President Duda, you've said you were thankful for the commitment that the president made for more troops today, but you hinted that you would like to see more. Ultimately, what is the number of troops that you'd like to see in Poland, U.S. troops?
Szanowna Pani Redaktor, to zawsze będzie oczywiście decyzja Stanów Zjednoczonych.
Always going to be the decision of the United States of America.
Let's see, who do I like? Nobody, that's the end. Go ahead. Yeah.
Mr. President, thank you very much.
I wasn't pointing to you, but you can go ahead. Here we go.
Pointing to.
I was actually pointing to my friend with that beautiful hat on, but that's okay.
All right.
You'll give up your question.
I'll give up my follow-up question.
You'll give up your.
We can share it.
We'll share the question.
Okay, we'll share it.
Mr. President, you seem to suggest yesterday that you are essentially committing to not spying on North Korea. Is that what you meant? Were those comments interpreted accurately?
No, it's not what I meant. It's what I said, and that's. I think it's different than maybe your interpretation. I think we're going to do very well with North Korea over a period of time. I'm in no rush. The sanctions are on. We got our hostages back. Our remains are coming back. You saw the beautiful ceremony in Hawaii with Mike Pence. We're getting the remains back. There's been no nuclear testing whatsoever. They'd like to do something. I did get, you know, very, as I said yesterday, a very nice letter from Chairman Kim, and I think we're doing very well. When I took over as president, I will tell you, it looked like it was going to be war with North Korea. You know that. Everybody knows that. And it was going to be quite brutal. A strong force. We're the strongest force in the world, but that's a strong force. And we started off a very rough relationship, and I think we have a very good relationship right now. So we'll see what happens. I'm in no rush. I'm in no rush. But there's been no nuclear testing whatsoever. And when I took over, it was nuclear testing all the time. And if you look back to the last 4, 5, 6 years, but really go back further than that, in all fairness to President Obama, go back 20 years, 15 years, it was really a very dangerous situation. I consider it to be different now. Now, I may change. If I change, you will know it very quickly. I will be very quick to tell you exactly what's going on. I may change, but right now we have a good relationship, and I think probably better than we've had for maybe 25 years, maybe forever. You know, they've been there a long time, the grandfather, the father, the son, and they've been there for a long time, and nobody's done anything except me. And so we'll see how it all turns out. I hope it turns out well for you and for everybody.
And I'll give my follow-up to Jeff very quickly. President Duda, thank you. Do you see Russia as an ally or an adversary?
Are you talking to me?
To President me. Duda.
Well, was that a set-up question?
Ja bym bardzo chciał, żeby Rosja
I would very much like Russia
Polski,
to be a friend of Poland because it is our great neighbor. It is a country much bigger than Poland with a bigger potential than Poland in every single respect, except for one, perhaps. I believe that we have got more courage in us, that we are more brave, more courageous, and are able to fight till the end, irrespective of everything. This is actually what we demonstrated in World War II at the Battle of Monte Cassino. We demonstrated that in the Warsaw Uprising. We demonstrated that in many other places around the globe where Polish soldiers died to make sure that Poland is free after the Second World War. This, unfortunately, did not happen. We found ourselves under the Russian occupation. But even then, for almost 20 years after World War II, there was this anti-communist, anti-Soviet underground which fought against the Soviets, and those people were murdered. Today, we call them unbreakable soldiers. We commemorate their memory, although they were dug underground to make it impossible for anyone to find their remains, and so that they couldn't have graves built. So we were always fighting, we always knew how to defend ourselves. Nevertheless, history was brutal towards us. We never had a great friendship with Russia. Russia was always looking out to take our territory. It was a partitioner in Poland for 123 years. Poland did not exist because part of the territory was taken by Russia. Poles were deported to the east. Then came an aggression on the right on the recently reborn Poland, which rose in 1918 from the ashes of the First World War. And in 1919, the Soviet Russia attacked Poland, wanted to grab Poland's territory and bring communism to the west of Europe. It was us who stopped Soviets at Warsaw in 1920 by the bravery of Polish soldiers. We defeated them during a great battle, and then we chased them back to the east. And then they took their revenge on us in 1939 by attacking us together with Nazi Germany and murdering our officers in Katyn. So, madam, as you can see, this friendship is a very difficult one. Today, we are in the following situation. Russia attacked Georgia, and then in 2014 it attacked Ukraine, and these are facts. These are facts which belong to the recent history. We would like Russia to be our friend, but unfortunately Russia again is showing its very unkind, unpleasant imperial face, and we do not want to be part of Russia's sphere of influence. And I am happy that today we can speak boldly, also in connection with the military presence of the U.S. and NATO in Poland, that we truly are, first and foremost in terms of politics, part of the West, because we have always been part of the West in terms of culture. We have always been part of the West, because it is from the West from which we adopted Christianity in 966, more than 1,000 years ago. And since that time, we have been part of the West of Europe. We have been part of the great Christian culture of Western Europe. But we have to stick to this West also in terms of politics. And this is what we want. And I firmly believe that this is the biggest desire of Polish people, to be part of the West, also in terms of politics. Thank you that the United States is supporting us in this respect.
Mr. President, excuse me.
And just to finish, I hope that Poland is going to have a great relationship with Russia. I think it's possible. I really do. I think because of what you've done and the strength, and maybe we help also because of what we're doing and doing for Poland. But I hope that Poland's going to have a great relationship with Russia. I hope we're going to have a great relationship with Russia. And by the way, China and many other countries. And we look forward to doing things on North Korea, just to go back to the original part of your question, and we'll see how that works out. I do want to say, though, we're in no hurry. The sanctions are on. China has actually been helping us quite a bit, and despite our trade differences right now, we thought we had a deal, and unfortunately they decided that they were going to change the deal, and they can't do that with me. But something's going to happen, and I think it's going to be something very positive. But we think we're going to get along with a lot of countries that, frankly, did not respect us very much because they were ripping us off for many, many years, and they're not ripping us off anymore. Jeff?
Thank you, sir. Regarding China, what is your deadline, if you have one, for China to make progress on trade before you impose the tariffs on the other $325 billion in goods?
Well, we're going to be meeting President Xi and myself, and you know we have a very good relationship. But again, he's for China and I'm for the U.S. It's a big difference. And we thought we had a deal. We didn't have a deal, and I would never make something that would be less than what we already had. We had China opened up to trade. That's a big thing. They've never done that before. We had intellectual property theft taken care of and taken care of beautifully. And all of a sudden, those things started to disappear at the end after they were fully negotiated. But that's, you know, that's their decision. I think if they had it to do again, and in light of the fact that we have 25% on $250 billion of goods coming into the United States, and unlike a lot of countries, they subsidize those goods. We haven't had inflation. And, you know, they keep saying that the American taxpayer is paying for it. No, no, very little. And what it really does mean is that a lot of those companies are in
China. And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.